to Pop Culture. I am Scott.
I'm Jason.
And I'm Monica.
Who did it better? Very simple question, but a very complicated answer. We are talking about Interview with the Vampire, specifically the film and the new television show adaptation, which hopefully you guys have seen. Otherwise, sorry. Monica.
Yes.
You're a little bit of a vampire fan.
I am. I dabble. Yeah, I really have this kind of series, specifically the Anne Rice vampire series, close to my heart. It's something that was really important to me in my late teens, early 20s. It got me into reading a lot. And when I saw the film for the first time, starring Brad Pitt, Tom Cruise, all these really, really big names, I was blown away by it because it was more or less book accurate. It was a sweeping kind of gothic romance in a way. And it was a really great depiction of vampires that I hadn't really seen before. Fast forward to 2022. Scott, you told me about the reboot to the television series, and I watched it, and it's completely changed the way that I think about the film.
In a good way?
In the best way possible, really. I have to say they have made changes between book and TV series that I feel do actually work and still keep the events of the film somewhat in canon, which kind of works for me, and that also reinforces, I guess, the driving point of the film, the book, the television series, all of them together, that Louis, our central character, is a really unreliable narrator about all the events that happen. And that's really what it's about. You have this ancient vampire who is meeting a reporter named Daniel to recount the story of his undead life. And the events of that story twists and changes. So in the film, we have, I guess, a more or less faithful adaptation of the book. But now, fast forward to the television series, Louis himself has sort of said, I would like to do this interview in the right way with a much older, a much meaner Daniel.
Because it's a second interview.
It's a second interview. And that's really, really intriguing. And you also have a reporter who is not afraid to sort of pry and to prod and do all that he can to try and make Louis honest in his storytelling.
A very aggressive approach as opposed to, like, it's been a very long time since I've seen the film. From memory, Christian Slater's character, Daniel, is like a very aggressive approach as opposed to, like, it's been a very long time since I've seen the film. From memory, Christian Slater's character, Daniel, is like kind of terrified, right? They're in like just a dark room, I remember.
He's made to realize that what's being told is, in fact, true by Louis jumping around the room all of a sudden and then suggesting that, yes, he was actually going to feed on him. So, yes, Christian Slater's character is a little bit more nervous about the whole thing. But he comes up to it and faces it. Yeah, it was an interesting change of tact, and it really did intrigue me seeing that they were going, this is a second interview and it's revisiting and challenging the original storytelling as such, or the perspective that was portrayed earlier on. So it gave it a little bit more depth in that sense of an unreliable narrator and perspective of Louis.
And Daniel, who's like not interested in bullshit anymore, and the aggressiveness of
Yeah, well, he's got to that age where he doesn't care anymore. It's sort of not much he can be held over him as. So I enjoyed that, and then it really did take an interesting shift to make him a black American in that period of time in that area. That's probably the only awkward part for me. It was sort of like a revisionist history aspect, but at the same time it opened up a whole lot of opportunities to develop the character in that context. It also removed that whole idea of being able to empathize with the character if you're you own slaves for cotton fields and things originally, and then you're just going, oh, woe is me, I want to commit suicide. And it's hard to empathize with that character who's causing suffering. But in this case, it's a bit different. He's still not a good character, like a good person.
No, I don't think he's not. The point is none of them are. So even Daniel's not good.
No.
Yeah, I think I'll call it a glow-up, Louis' glow-up. He is this black business owner, and he's also trying to gain upward mobility. And he can play cards with the local white politicians and business owners, but they absolutely expect a sir at the end of each of his sentences, which is really highlighted in the series. And Lestat, in his really weird way, tries to uplift him from that and to have this kind of chip on his shoulder about his status. And the dynamic of Louis' kind of otherness and how it's amplified more when he becomes a vampire as well is really, really stark. That vampirism almost gives him the excuse eventually to unleash upon all these people who have been, you know, sticking their boot on his neck.
Yeah. And he very much becomes the villain that they perceive him to be.
Which is probably that's probably the greatest strength of it, because when you look back at the film and even the book, I just suddenly realised I didn't really like that character of Louis. He just seemed really whiny. And, you know, we've got another podcast, The Killer, where we're talking about the Smiths. The soundtrack of the Smiths goes with the original Louis. You know, that's...
I think a part of that is also to do with the actor portraying Louis between the film and the television series. Brad Pitt is a really, really big name and can be really good in some stuff, but I think he was oddly miscast in the film just to be this whining, monotone, boring vampire in contrast to Tom Cruise's actually really good performance. And you have Jacob Anderson, who is just full of charisma.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I thought he was a really, really great Louis. He also played off really well with his castmates as well. You do feel these moments of empathy for him, especially when he's a human and you sort of see the last days of his brother's life as well in the pilot episode when he jumps off the roof. Oh my God, it's tragic.
Yeah, I found him much more sympathetic than I remember Brad Pitt's performance in the original. I don't even remember.
It is very monotoned is the best way I can describe it.
I don't even remember. I remember Tom Cruise and I'm like, wow, that's weird. That's the Mission Impossible guy being very good. And Antonio Banderas, I remember standing out. But that's, and of course, wow, I was about to say Christina Ricci. Jeez.
That would have been amazing.
Jeez. Kirsten Dunst. But I don't remember Brad Pitt at all. Like, from the film, I just don't.
Yeah, he is the titular vampire, but he is the most forgettable part of the film. Yeah.
Whereas, yeah, I found Louis much more interesting in the show.
Yeah, me too.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And, I mean, Jacob Anderson's awesome. Like, from, what was he, Grey Worm, in Game of Thrones. So, good on him.
He also got some really great lines that he got to deliver. What was it? And pardon my language, but he was talking about the guy who screwed him over in a deal to buy the Azalea. And he goes, oh, you know, he chose to dabble in fuckery. And it was just perfectly delivered and I loved every second of it. I'm like, oh, this is great. This is what I've always wanted to see in Louis, like that backbone.
Lestat. So arguably one of the bigger names in literary vampires.
Yeah, for sure.
I thought Sam Reed. Did a phenomenal job and was incredibly creepy and really quite terrifying in places. Tom Cruise was fine, but I think this doing the show without the constraints, I guess, that they would have had making the movie with name actors like that in 1994, his manipulation and it can go a lot further.
Yeah, Lestat is this larger than life
sexual
kind of
predator.
He's a lot of things. Lestat, I think he's a wonderful character, but I would never want to be in a room with him because he is a horrible, horrible creature who is capable of doing equally horrible things to those that he claims to love. And to Sam Reed's performance, it's really, really good. I've seen him in a couple of other things, like The Newsreader on ABC.
He's an Australian fellow, isn't he?
He's an Australian dude, and he's really, really good. And I think... also in defense of Tom Cruise's portrayal, which I actually still really enjoy from the film's portrayal, I think Sam Reed has more to chew on because they're trying to sort of demonstrate the life between Louis and Lestat and later Claudia as well. So you have that family dynamic. You have what Lestat is like as, I guess, a sexual partner, and you also have Lestat as also Louis' abuser.
Yeah, and then creepy, their alternative views on parenting, I guess, is the way to put it.
Yes, and also the way in which he is dispatched at the end of season one as well as really high melodrama as well, which I think he plays up really, really brilliantly for a character like Lestat, who is just as much a diva as he is a monster.
It's also the problem of trying to compare someone who's got to play a character within an hour and a half to 2 hours to a whole season.
Exactly, right.
So... looking back at it, I'd say Tom Cruise is the standout part of the film.
I would agree.
And I think unexpectedly so too, because even Anne Rice was like, nah.
She didn't want him.
Yeah, no. She wrote like a one-page ad in a newspaper to be like condemning the film's casting and stuff and then did an apology later.
Yeah. I think Tom Cruise has always done whatever he could to do well with a character. It's something that he never really seems to shortchange, and it shows up in Interview with the Vampire. But it was sort of coming out of that time when he'd done things like Born on the 4th of July.
As well, would have been around then.
Well, no, that's after it.
Oh, is it after?
Yeah, Born on the 4th of July and all of those sorts of films where he was no longer just the action hero.
The Top Gun guy?
Yeah. Yeah. And so, yeah, I think Tom Cruise, I agree with Monica there. It's a standout performance in that. The elephant in the room of the film was never really explored as much as the series, and that being the homoerotic aspect of the whole thing.
Yeah, it's...
Is the book as graphic? Because I didn't get into the...
No, the book is all subtext. Because
it's in 76, I'm like...
Yeah, it's probably closer to the film, so it's all suggestive.
Mm.
And Anne Rice's language helps you understand that it is being treated in a romantic language.
Right.
In the way that it's all described, but no actions...
Yep.
Solidify it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Other than, you know, I guess penetrating fangs.
Yes.
Sort of what? Idea.
But that's, you know, that's the sexual overtone of vampires.
Yes. That's the whole thing.
Yeah. And so the series actually going, yep, we're not going to hide all of that, is quite an interesting maneuver away from the book and probably helps explore even more. Because if you just sort of leave it as this sort of subtle thing, off to the side.
Yeah.
Don't talk about that.
I think it's a lot to do as well with times have changed. And at the time, Anne Rice wrote the screenplay for the film and she was really aware of that kind of thing. And she deliberately didn't make the subtext come to the surface in the film, even though she wanted to, because she was worried about Hollywood's perception of what homosexuality is. So she was very gun-shy about it, whereas... Now in 2022, I think you have a little bit more liberation when it comes to that, and you know you have same-sex romantic storylines, and you know everything else that comes along with it. So why not go for it?
And they handle it well too, as part of, I guess, Louis being a black man, but now he's an undead gay black man, makes it even more of a challenge navigating these political waters, and it becomes like the talking point of the town, like, oh, now he's queer too.
Yeah.
Like it adds this very interesting drama, and also I guess fuels your sympathy for him, and also like, yeah, fuck him, tear him apart.
Yeah.
No, I think they did a really, really good job on the show in that regard.
I think so as well. It just plays to a more modern audience that would be more receptive to it. So why not have it there?
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess maybe the other character to talk about is Claudia, who finishes the little trio within that family. You have Kirsten Dunst from the film, who is, I guess, the right age. Being this forever child. I actually really liked Bailey Bass as Claudia. I thought she was amazing. I didn't mind that they aged her up to a teenager, because what's harder than the transition into adulthood than being a teenager? And, you know, a young woman who's wanting to explore her body, explore romance and all that kind of stuff, and slowly realizing that that's not possible for her. She also can't make another one like her because she's not strong enough to do it. And she's also a serial killer. She embraces it. She is probably the most vicious of the three in her vampirism, I would say. And
well, it's like as a children with no understanding of right and wrong, and their, I guess in her case anyway, physical abilities.
Yeah, 100%. Like when she attacks the police officer, and Louis and Lissac kind of freak out a little bit because they understand the ramifications of that. They're like, what did we say? Don't kill cops.
I remember Kirsten Dunst's performance well, but you said she does scream a lot. They do give a lot of nuance to Bailey Bass's character, Claudia.
Yeah.
And then the weird girl and her father's doing murder games and stuff together.
Yeah, but also through her diaries, and again, this is part of Louis' censorship of Claudia's diaries, because he rips out pages from her diary, so we don't get a full picture of what her experience is like. They go to the films and they go see Nosferatu, and they think it's the funniest thing in the world. And it's those little snippets there that really kind of bring the whole story together and weave it into something quite magical.
So this is the joy of having 7 hours to
play.
Like, and it's only, I guess, well, we'll see, I guess, half the story.
Yeah.
Maybe a third, who knows?
I'd say probably about half the book has been portrayed in the first scene.
And it does end very much with a Interview with a Vampire part one.
Yeah.
Placard proudly right at the end.
I mean, that's Anne Rice. That's something that she would end something on. It's like, nope, you'll have to wait a few years until I write the next book.
Yeah. So, I was very impressed by the show. I thought it was fantastic.
Oh, yeah, me too. Like, there's some weak points to where I think some of the humour can be a little bit displaced. And also I find some of the gore to be a little bit Tarantino-esque, which doesn't always quite gel with the melodrama.
It's a bit splatty.
It's a little bit Tarantino meets Baz Luhrmann.
Yeah, I could handle that.
Yeah. Yeah, right?
Your thoughts? Your closing
ultimately,
statement?
Ultimately, yes, my thoughts on the comparison.
Because you had very interesting things to say before about you, your feelings changing.
Yes, this is probably me over time changing how I viewed Interview with the Vampire. And when I read the book, I was quite amazed with the book, how different it was to what vampire stories I'd read before. And, you know, the subtle subtext to it, all of these things that were in it. I saw the movie and was amazed with the movie, probably more enamoured by Tom Cruise's performance and Kirsten Dunst than Brad Pitt. But then I went back and watched it again, and I just found Louis to be the most boring character I had watched in a long time. And it could be that Brad Pitt, delivery of it, was the problem. But then I reflected back on the book, and he was sort of like that, just sort of this whinging, you know, poor woe is me, emo, if you want.
Kind of. I think it also, Brad Pitt notoriously really didn't like being on set because it was constantly dark and he had to have contacts in, and he was really uncomfortable with the whole process. So that also probably leads into the way he portrays the character.
There's
a little
bit. But I think it's also just that character itself.
Oh, for sure.
The series, though, made me go, well, I'm looking at someone different. So if I'm doing that final statement on it, I'd say the series has developed it to a point that makes it interesting and probably more relevant again than when I started watching all the other stuff and looking back again.
Cool. So I guess who did it better?
Show.
There you go, guys. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Pop Culture. I've been Scott.
I'm still Jason.
And I'm still Monica.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Popped Culture. You can follow us on Twitter, or X rather, at PCulturePod. And you can follow us on Facebook at facebook.com/PoppedCulturePod. Thank you guys for listening. And please, if you're feeling generous, leave us a review on wherever you listen to your podcast. Thanks, and we will catch you next time. Bye.